The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, October 8th, 2018.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Hey, today is Columbus Day, or in some states, it's known as Indigenous People Day, and we're going to be talking about that later in the show. I'm going to do something a little bit different for today's show. I will be playing some songs. I will be doing some short commentary, and perhaps reading a poem or two. I believe in light of what happened in the past week with women across the country protesting the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, who was confirmed this Saturday, you know, we need to talk about it a little bit. And so many are saddened, angered, and just plain disappointed over this appointment. And I personally experienced my sadness and anger and feeling a sense of betrayal. Yet in my mind, I came to the conclusion that this is a blessing in disguise. I'm sure some people are saying, why is she saying that, blessing in disguise? Well, I call it a blessing in disguise because we get to see without a doubt that many of those who represent us have no respect for women, no compassion for what many have gone through, and that their priorities do not include the safety of women or children. You know, I looked up our leader who led this whole advancement to get Mr. Kavanaugh confirmed by Mitch McConnell. I couldn't believe it that he got into the Senate in 1984. That means he has served for 34 years. That means he has enjoyed all the comforts of being a senator. And yet at this time in space that he did not work a little bit harder for the people, and how he could have worked harder for the people. You know, I can't say that this nomination is right or wrong at this point. But the big question mark I have is there was not a thorough investigation done. I don't understand that. I really don't. I don't understand why our Senate did not demand that the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, that's their job, do a thorough investigation on this man to make sure that none of these accusations were correct. It felt like they just, 2 seconds, they did this report and we don't even get to hear what was in the report. It's not even given out to the public. I mean, what are they hiding? I mean, that's the big question mark in our minds, at least in my mind. I want to trust my government. I want to support my government. But when they do things like this, it puts a big question mark in my mind, and it's very, very dangerous. And also, as a woman, I mean, I went to Sonoma State in 1973, and I was introduced to women's studies. And I got to tell you the truth, I was shocked. I had no idea of what women went through, number one, to get the vote, number two, to even be able to run for office. And I became very committed to the women's movement because I had a daughter, you know, and then I had a granddaughter, and now I have a great-granddaughter. I mean, 3 generations of women, actually, you know, when you start thinking about it. I mean, we thought we had it made, you know, we were going to have rights, we're going to be able to run for office, you know, and abortion became legal. Not that every woman wanted to run out and have an abortion, but the idea was, is now we had freedom of choice. Very important. And, you know, when you look back in our history and you look at us getting the vote in 1920, we only got the vote by 1 vote. Well, anyway, I had such a feeling of betrayal came over me as a woman, as a grandmother, and now a great-grandmother when Maine Senator Susan Collins, a moderate Republic who often is a swing vote on issues, paved the way for the nominee to the Supreme Court. She was the swing vote, and I have to report for 20 minutes, I listened to her do this speech. It made no sense to me. She justified it. She even said that she didn't read the complete, I mean, it was a short FBI report, and she reports that she didn't even read the whole thing, and yet she voted to confirm this man. I really felt betrayed. I really did. All these women protesting, these brave women. I mean, Dr. Ford coming forward like that, to me, was really very, very brave. I mean, look what she's gone through. Look at the condemnation that she's had to experience. I mean, you think that our Senate would welcome this and say, wow, this is very interesting. We better check this out. This is a very important position, a very important appointment. It's just mind-boggling. And then when she said, now we're going to, you know, she was tired of a 5-4 vote. What does that mean? I mean, the whole idea, I mean, our Supreme Court is supposed to be a sacred body that makes sure that the citizens of the United States have checks and balances and are treated equal under the law. Amazing that this happened. But at the same time, some very positive things happened. And I want to do a special shout out to the United States Senator Lisa Murkowski. She's a Republican from Arkansas. Saturday, she spoke on the Senate floor on her decision to oppose the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And the reason she did that is she said her conscience could not let her vote for him because she did not know. There was not a thorough investigation. She's looking at all these women out there protesting. She's thinking about it, and she said, I just can't do it. And she even stated, this has been an agonizing decision, she said Friday. It is a hard choice, probably as close a call as any that I can ever remember. I hope and pray that we don't find ourselves in this situation again. But I'm worried, I'm really worried that this becomes the new normal where we find new and even more creative ways to tear one another down, Murkowski laminated. Very, very interesting. She said she could not, and then she went on that she couldn't vote for it. She didn't feel that there was a complete investigation. She did not feel that it was the right thing to do at this time. What a stand she took. I mean, against all these men, I mean, when you start thinking about it, the pressure that she must have experienced was beyond anything that I would want to experience. Well, we now have two men sitting on the highest court of the land who have been accused of sexual misconduct, which in my mind was not proven whether they're innocent or guilty. You know, that's why we have investigations. That's why we have laws. Laws protect us. I mean, I'm sure anybody out there, if it happened to them, it would be, you know, if we were standing up, I'm sure they would investigate us from one end to the other, if you know what I mean. Well, it's really hard, and I don't know. I really don't. And when women standing up the way they did, you know, we have to be reminded of our past. You know, we got the vote in 1920 after almost 100 years of struggle. I mean, not just struggle. I mean, women went to jail. They were waterboarded. They had to spend jail time. I mean, just because they wanted the vote in a free country, they wanted the vote. And we worked very, very hard for it. And guess what? To show how enthusiastic these men were about us getting the vote, we only got the vote by one vote. One vote. If the mother hadn't sent the telegram to her son and said, if you don't vote to have women vote, I don't want you coming home, we may still be struggling for the vote. And now something like this. When here's a woman that comes up and says, I'm questioning the character of somebody who's going to be appointed to the highest position in our land, and our Senate does not do a thorough investigation. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's a disgrace not only to women, but to our nation. We are a nation of laws. We are a nation of checks and balances. And this is not the right thing to do. But at the same time, like I said, it's a blessing in disguise, because now we see what we're up against. Now we see what we have to struggle to move forward with. And we see it's not going to be an easy battle. I mean, to be honest with you, my friends asked me, they says, well, do you think? I said, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. And when they did, I can't believe what it felt like for me. You know, I'm just a first-generation American on my father's side, second on my mother's side. We came from oppression. We came from countries that didn't want us, that threw us out to the land of the free. You know, I remember my grandmother telling me when she saw the Statue of Liberty, she threw herself on the ground and said, oh, my God, I'm in America. I mean, it just makes me cry. It really does. It's so upsetting to me that sometimes I talk to Ken, and I talk a lot about it. He tends to have a very positive idea. He believes, you know, we're going to move forward. You know, we have to look at the beautiful home we have, you know, the wonderful city we live in, our friends. You know, we have to look at all the good around us. But at the same time, there's just this little feeling in my heart, you know, a kind of a hurt. I feel hurt. I don't even feel betrayed. I just feel hurt in a deep, deep sense. But at the same time, a special shout out to the men and women who showed up here in Sonoma County at the federal building. For 4 days, they protested. Our press Democrat did not have one word, unless I missed it. You know, if I missed it, please somebody email me at elaine@womenspaces.com, because I don't want to make a mistake here. But I went through that paper, and I did not see any mention of the fact that there were women out there and men that joined us. And I got to tell you, it was such a nice feeling. It was a wonderful feeling, actually, being with all these people of like minds. And I even got to do the pledge. I loved it. You know, hearing these women and men coming together, you know, talking about that their self-esteem is intact so they can stand up against what they believe is wrong. It was really great, you know. And I showed up for the National Organization of Women. I finally got a great picture of me holding a NOW sign. I was really excited about that. And, you know, I want to remind all you listeners out there that the National Organization for Women is alive and well here in Sonoma County. We meet the third Wednesday of every month at the Roundtable Pizza on Marlowe by Guerneville Road, from 1 to 3, and we really welcome everyone to come join us. It's very important that women come together and have an opportunity to not only join, not only belong to an organization, this is a national organization, but also to get some support. You know, we need to support one another, because things feel very fragile these days. They really feel fragile. You know, I feel fragile. Like I said, there's like a little pain in my heart. Well, that's a lot to think about, an awful lot to think about. And I'll tell you what keeps me going is the fact that I am a great-grandmother, and I think of this young, precious miracle that's been put into my life. And it just gives me the energy that I need to keep moving forward, to keep doing the radio show, to keep speaking out for injustices, speaking out for the world's children, for our local children. Very, very important. And I want to remind folks that on November 6th, we are going to the polls. This is the first time in Sonoma County's history. Santa Rosa, California has district elections. We have 6 people running for city council, which is very exciting. Actually, KPBF is 89.1 FM, has given me the honor of, they've allowed me 2 hours that Ken and I are going to be able to do an election special where we're going to interview all the candidates for city council in Santa Rosa, and that's going to be happening next Monday from 3 to 5 p.m. I hope you folks tune in. Very important. If our vote, let's think about this. If our vote was not important, why are they making such rigmarole and trying to change things around? Why are we having such difficulty around voting? Because it is important. And you know, it's the very least you can do. And I think in about a week, the ballot by mail is going to go out. And I really encourage people, get them in. Don't go to your polls and drop them off. Mail them in. Mail them in at least 3 days before election to guarantee that that vote is going to be counted. We are entering one of the most important election cycles that we've had in decades. People need to go to the polls. And there are many, many people out there trying to encourage that. Pay attention. When you don't vote, and like I said, it's the very least you can do. Fill out a piece of paper and mail it in. I mean, they make it so easy for you. If you don't vote, you're saying two things. One, you don't care. And number two, whatever happens is okay with you. You know, I always ask people when they complain, I say, oh, did you vote? If they say no, I say, I don't want to listen to you, because that's the very least you can do is vote. Very important. And to remind the women out there, what a disgrace if you don't vote, with a capital D. It took us 100 years to get you to the polls. And not to vote, especially if you have children. Because what you're saying is, this is the future. This is what I want for the future. This is who I want to represent me. And if you don't care, hey, let's face it, you're not going to get the best in the West, that's for sure. So remember, November 6th is Election Day. Everybody needs to go to the polls. Well, that's a lot. That's a lot to say. And I have one important announcement to make that I want to encourage people. My dear friend Laura Gonzalez, she's doing a seminar on Mexican history. The historical highlights of our neighborhood to the south will be presented in order to gain some insight into the country with whom we share a 2,000-mile border. So she's going to be on Saturday, October 13th. She's going to be at the Sebastopol Library in Sebastopol. And then on Wednesday, November 7th, she's going to be at the Rohnert Park Cotati Library. And you can find all the information if you go onto our website, www.womenspaces.com, and you can find out. But this is really, really exciting. Celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month. I mean, it's really important that we understand each other. The more we understand about each other, the more we interact with each other, the more comfortable we feel, and the better chance we have to move forward in a way where there's more equality for all. So it's really important to show up at events like this. I think they're really important, and I know Laura Gonzalez, she's a teacher, and I know any type of seminar she's going to be doing, she's going to put a lot of effort and a lot of attention to it. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and the song that I'm going to play is a rather long song. I want you folks out there listening to know it is long. It's called The Ones Who Came Before Us. It's a reminder to those women in power, you did not make it on your own. You stepped into positions that the women before you fought hard to achieve. You know, when you start thinking of voting for this and not insisting, because like I said, I'm going to say it again. I'm not saying he should be in or he shouldn't be in. What I'm saying is we should have done a thorough investigation. And because they did not do a thorough investigation, there's a big question mark in my mind. And I wish that question mark would be cleared up. You know, and I feel people like Susan Collins, you know, as hard as women work to get you in office, I say shame on you. I don't say how you should have voted. I'm not saying you should have voted yes. I'm not saying you should have voted no. I'm saying for the women of our country, you should have demanded a thorough investigation to make sure that the man that we are sitting on the Supreme Court is far superior in integrity and principle than either or any one of us. Anyway, let's go ahead and listen to The Ones Who Came Before Us. And when I come back, we're going to talk about Indigenous Peoples Day, give a little history lesson, and all kinds of little things that are going to be happening during this show. And to my listeners out there, thank you so much for supporting Women's Spaces. And a reminder, the best way you can support this show is please become a member of KBBF. All you have to do is go on our website, www.kbbf.org, look at the donation. You can either become a sustaining member or just a member, you know, just become a membership, a family member or a business membership. But become a member. Support your local community radio, because that's who we are. Not only are we local, we cover 18 counties besides Sonoma County, and we're a bilingual station. We have shows in English, Spanish, English and Spanish, and even some indigenous shows. So it's very important that you support this station. So again, go to www.kbbf.org. Go to the right-hand side, you'll see donations, click that, and all the information will come up to you. You know, I got to tell you, on a personal note, I love all this technology. I really think it's going to save us, because we can communicate with one another. We can support one another. We can find out what's going on in the world. No more secrets. You know, I always like to think the emperor has no clothes, because we have media. And the media, and we have social media that gives us more information than we've ever had before. So let's go ahead and listen to The Ones Who Came Before Us by Bev Grant.
There are times we reach the edge of an opening, a breaking through, and we know the situation calls for something new. There are times we cannot see what's just ahead, but still we know there is a life to be led, a path to follow, and we must go, and we must go.
Yes, we will make it through. And when I listen to that song, I can't help but remember Hilary Swank in Ironjawed Angels played Alice Paul. And when I listen to the song, you know, the ones who came before us, I think of Alice Paul in jail, standing up, being waterboarded, being confined, doing what she did and doing what all the suffrage did. So as women, we could have a voice. We could have a vote. I mean, it's just amazing when you think about it. Well, folks, for you just joining in, you're listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners, the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And you know, today is Columbus Day, or as in some cities, I love it, it's called Indigenous Peoples Day. This is a U.S. federal holiday which commemorates the date when Christopher Columbus first set foot on the Americas. In the United States, it is observed on the second Monday in October. Though Columbus Day is one of the 10 U.S. legal federal holidays, it's really not considered a major one. And what's so interesting is more than 50 cities across the U.S. have renamed Columbus Day to Indigenous People's Day, and it's growing across the U.S., and it's helped replace Columbus Day with Indigenous People's Day as a tug-of-war between rival views of the country's history stretches on. You know, it's kind of interesting when you start thinking about it. You know, here Columbus, we have this, I mean, I grew up thinking, wow, he was this great man, he discovered America, he did all these things, and then all of a sudden you start finding out some of the cruelties. Some of the issues that our Native Americans had, you know, at that time. You know, what I really don't understand is it's so interesting to me how people come to one land and they can't just come in peace and say, hey, you live here, how do we all get along? You know, no, we're going to conquer, we're going to take over. And you know, what's really interesting is that there's a growing movement across the United States to end Columbus Day and call it Indigenous Peoples Day to remind people of the struggle that our Native Americans went through when Columbus actually came into the United States. You know, many of us think of this as a day off from work or a day of special sales in the department store. And I think it's important that we educate ourselves, that we do something to find out what is this day about? Why is it important? Why do we celebrate it? You know, I never thought of things like this. You know, I never thought, you know, Columbus Day, yeah, I just went along with it. You know, Christmas, I just went along with it. You know, all the different things that come up, you just go along with it instead of researching it and find out, what is it all about? You know, what is it all about? And try to make some changes. And that's what I think people are trying to do. By naming it Indigenous Peoples Day, they're trying to bring more credibility to the natives that were here before they came, and to also look at how our country was built. You know, who helped us build it? Who helped us with the things that we have today at our fingertips? I mean, we're a free country. You know, when you look at things that happen like this, you wonder, are we really a free country? Or are we bound by laws that we don't even understand or don't even know? And when you look at history, there's always an other. There's always somebody else that has to suffer for what somebody else wants. And my question out there is, what is it going to take to get us all to the table and to just put down your guns? You know, I've been listening. There's a song that I've been listening to. Actually, it's a play, and it's called, I'm going to make sure I pronounce it, Nanyachi. It's a story of Nancy Ward, who was a Native American who was led her people in, there was some Indian wars that she led her people to freedom. You know, and it's really interesting when you start looking at the Native American history and some of the things that they went through. And I'm really excited because on October 22nd, I hope you guys tune in, to Women's Spaces, I'm actually going to be, my names get sometimes a little bit mixed up, Becky Hobbs, who actually wrote a play about Nanyachi and five great-grandmothers of this Native American woman. And I think her story is just amazing. You know, there's a song that I play every once in a while that's called Let There Be Peace. And when I first found the song, I thought to myself, wait, is this Let There Be Peace on Nurse? No, it's Let There Be Peace. It's a story of the Cherokee Nation and what they went through. And the first line of the song, I just love this. I was born in a cornfield in the land of the Cherokee. And, you know, there's a movie I saw. It's called The Good Earth. And it was with Louise Reiner and Paul Muni. It was made, I think, in the late 40s. And there's a scene in The Good Earth where the woman goes out to the field. You know, she's pregnant. She's working in the rice fields with her husband. She goes into labor. She goes into the backfield, kind of squats and gives birth to her child, puts it in swaddling clothes, and then goes right back to work with her husband in the field. I mean, I'll never forget that scene as long as I live, especially it even has more meaning to me when I saw what my granddaughter Amber went through to bring forward my beautiful little great-granddaughter Satori. I saw what it took for a woman to bring forward a child. It was the most stunning moment I have ever, ever experienced. And I had even deeper understanding for that scene in The Good Earth to see what women went through in the rice fields to just give birth. It was amazing. And then here's this beautiful song about this Native American woman that I think is very important to play. You know, the song just touches my heart. So right now, in honor of Indigenous Peoples Day and in honor of Nancy Ward, Nayihi, who was a Native American woman who led her people to peace and sacrificed much of her life and also became Nancy Ward because she ended up marrying an American who was an American trapper. Very, very interesting and was very, very much involved with the Cherokees trying to bring peace and harmony as the white man came and took over their villages and their lands. So let's go ahead and listen to this song sung by Becky Hobbs. And we come back, I'm going to read a poem and talk about a few things. And, you know, I just hope you're enjoying this show. It's a little bit different. You know, I very rarely take a whole hour for myself, but I just thought it was important. I thought it was important, particularly of everything that went on this past week. And again, a special shout out to all the women who stood up for justice, who stood up for this investigation. You know, it's an amazing time. So here we go. We're going to listen to Nayihi, sung by Becky Hobbs.
Nayihi, Nayihi of the Cherokee. You were brave, you were strong, you were 17. Led your people in war, then you stood for peace. Now it's time we remembered your words. You will be heard. Nayihi, Nayihi, did the world forget? You saved lives red and white with your blood and sweat. You gave hope, you showed kindness to all you met. Now the world will remember your words. You will be heard. Will be heard. You will be heard.
I don't care how many times I hear that song, I start to cry. And the ending, it says, you will be heard. You will be heard. What was her words? Let there be love. Let there be peace. These were part of her words. Let there be love. Let there be peace. And then there's another song in this, Let There Be Peace. There's one line in there where she says, the white wolf cried as the children died. Put down your guns. And another thing, another one of her words that I think are so powerful, when she says, the white men's heart beat just like ours. Why don't they understand? Whoa. Anyway, I'm looking forward to interviewing Becky Hobbs on October 22nd. I'm really excited. We're going to play all kinds of music around this wonderful woman, Naya He. Just amazing to me. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And today we're just doing something a little bit different. Columbus Day, or say in some places they know it as Indigenous People Day. I just think that's an amazing transition. You know, again, an awareness. We're becoming more aware. You know, denial is very dangerous. You know, we have to become aware of some of the issues that happen, and we can change things. But we cannot change if we don't know what needs to be changed. Well, anyway, I thought I would read a few, one or two poems. And, you know, I talk a lot about the children, you know, and the children. And before I go into my song, my poem, you might say that I'm a dreamer. I want to read this little poem that I wrote, Max, about a 5-year-old young boy. His name is Max. He's the 5-year-old grandson of my dear friend, Debbie Menger, who owns Coffee Cats out here in Sebastopol. And one day she showed me a picture of her grandson, Max. He was so adorable in his shirt and tie, and he seemed so sure of himself. Yet he had an aura of sensitivity. And Debbie said to me that he told her the only thing he wants is to kids to come play with him. That's simple. All he wants is he wants to have friends to come play with him. So I wrote this short poem for Max. Come play with me. I do not care if you come from afar or what color you are. Come play with me. Come play with me. Come play with me. So simple. So simple. I'm going to read it one more time. For Max, come play with me. I do not care if you come from afar or what color you are. Come play with me. Come play with me. Come play with me. What a beautiful thought. Children are innocent until we teach them differently. And we have to remember that. A child lives what it learns. A child lives what it learns. And when you look at a child, they just want to play with you. They have no prejudice. They just want to play. It's almost like little puppies. You know, they just want to just be, hop on your lap and play. It's just amazing. Well, way back, you're not going to believe this, I mean, way back in the 60s, when all of a sudden, you know, the protest and the Vietnam War and all the things that we went through, and I'll tell you something, I was so innocent, I thought, oh, everything is perfect, and then all of a sudden to get educated about what was happening in Vietnam and what was going on with our soldiers. Some of the things that were happening when they were coming back. You know, I was going to Los Angeles City College at the time. It was really, really kind of interesting. And I didn't think that the United States could do anything wrong. You know, to me, as far as I was concerned, the Vietnam War was fine. Anyway, I come into the office one day, into the journalism office, and my editor, Rita Cash, and Rita Cash was about, she reminds me of Queen Victoria. She was maybe 5 feet tall, if she was that much, and maybe weighed 100 pounds. And she had rheumatoid arthritis. So she, when she held a pen in her hand, she kind of gripped it and wrote. It was phenomenal, just the fact that she could even write. And so I came in the office and she says, Elaine, she says, you got to help me. She says, we got to do this interview. She says, I know you're not against the war. She says, but you got to go out to the field. We've got the wheelchair brigade out there. I says, wheelchair brigade? I mean, what's a wheelchair brigade? You know, I was thinking of all these wheelchairs, you know, just marching. Anyway, I went out to the field in Los Angeles City College, and there were 50 young men in wheelchairs protesting the Vietnam War and protesting the idea that the veterans was not taking care of them and that PTSD was just coming on the scene. And I went and interviewed almost every single one of them. And when I came out, let me tell you something, I was anti-war. I couldn't believe what I heard. I couldn't believe what I learned. I couldn't believe that all these young men, there was not one of them that was over 22 years of age. I was shocked. I was shocked. So I came home. And I wrote this simple poem. At the time, I was really, to be honest with you, I was a very simple writer. Maybe I'm a little more complex now, I don't know. But this was a pretty simple poem that I wrote. I want to share with you. It's called, You Might Say I Am a Dreamer. Last night, I had a beautiful dream about life and all it could mean. I dreamt how beautiful it was to live, when the entire world learned to give. Humankind at last learned how to use their highest level of thought. Making wars no longer, peace was taught. Prejudice was a thing in the past. All humankind became equal at last. The cry of hunger and pain were no longer heard every day. Humans learned to give, to help others along the way. How beautiful it was to live. How great to give. Peace at last. War and hate in the dim past. Fear and mistrust were unheard of. All humans knew were trust and love. With a start, I woke up from my beautiful dream. I opened my ears and eyes, hearing and seeing all of humankind's cry. Tears of sorrow fell down my face as I vowed to help change this place. Wow, that was a heavy-duty poem, especially I never recognized the last lines. Tears of sorrow fell down my face as I vowed to help change this place. And that's what happened to me. I wanted to change. I wanted to see change. My daughter was only about maybe 6 years old at the time. And I wanted change. And I had to look at myself. You know, who was I as a person? You know, what, you know, why am I thinking this way? You know, why aren't I more worried about maybe finding a second husband or, you know, other things? What am I doing in school? What am I doing protesting these things? What am I doing standing up? You know, and then coming to Sonoma State all of a sudden, you know, be involved in women's studies. Well, while I was involved in women's studies, and this was, I came here in Sonoma State in 1973. God, that's a long time ago. I was 33 years old at the time. I mean, I was an older student. I went back to school when I was in my 30s, and my daughter was just starting kindergarten. I used to drop her off at kindergarten, and then I would go to Los Angeles City College, and then later on transferred up here to Sonoma State. That's how I got in. That's how I end up living in Sonoma County. Who could leave this county? It's so beautiful. And while I was at Sonoma State in women's studies, I asked myself this question, who am I? So I thought I'd read this little poem that I wrote, and it's called Ozzie and Harriet. I mean, this kind of explains me a little bit, I guess. I never found Ozzie, no matter how hard I tried. If I did, I would be like Harriet, living the lie. The joy of having a white picket fence that stripped away my defense. If I lived that way, I knew I could not be the person the woman I wanted to be. I felt a deep scream within me, fearing I would be swept away into the role, the lifestyle of make-believe. So you see, not finding Ozzy was best for me. Not finding Ozzy was best for me. Well, I'll tell you something. I was single for 16 years until I found Ken. And Ken is definitely not Ozzy. But the thing is that I was not cut out to be a traditional, whatever that is, woman. Because I learned. I start reading the philosophers. I start thinking about peace. I start looking at the children. They came out with this wonderful poem in the 60s called Children Learn What They Live. I went through the whole thing. I'll bring it on one show and read it to everybody. It's amazing, amazing idea. And I tried to follow that when I raised my own daughter. I raised her as a single parent. But definitely, Ozzy was not for me. The white picket fence was not for me. I knew that there was more that had to be done. It's not to say that I wouldn't have liked that white lifestyle. I mean, who could deny that? I mean, I know people who have lived in little towns and never even thought that there was anything wrong in the world. Everything was so nice because they were behind that picket fence. But that just wasn't for me. And it's not for a lot of women out there, because we recognize that we want to have a better world for our children. We want a better world for our young girls and our young boys. I mean, the thought of even, you know, I look at some of these mothers that they dress their boys, their young children, babies, in military gear. It's just shocking to me. What are we doing, preparing them for eternal war? I mean, we got to start thinking about those things. We really do. We have to think about them and not be afraid. Well, I'm going to share one more poem with you, and this kind of denotes some of my frustration. And the frustration I have is because I did come from a time, you know, I was born in the 40s. It was different, you know. In 45, men came back from the war. All of a sudden, everybody was buying homes. We had a middle class. My father was a union man. I mean, it was amazing. It was amazing how life was. It certainly is different today. So I'm going to read this one poem. I'm from the old school. Just think about that. I'm from the old school. Here we go. I believe in doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. Where are the voices that answered the phone as I sit and listen to a recorded voice saying, press 1? Where are the young men who washed my windows, checked my oil and tires? Back then, it seemed there were human beings who showed they cared about me. I miss Plotkin's grocery store, where I could find candy and gum galore. I miss the real voices. I miss someone asking me, and how was your day? I miss the time I had limited choices, when there were only 5 stations on that mystical box that put new and exciting images in front of me. I miss the sounds of children playing in the street. Life seemed so simple back then, when gasoline was 29 9/10 cents a gallon. Life seemed so simple back then, when gasoline was 29 9/10 cents a gallon. Can you believe that? Almost 30 cents for a gallon of gas. I just paid, I think, $3.31. I got a discount because I go to a supermarket that allows credits. I mean, it cracks me up when I think about it. Well, folks, that's a lot to think about, you know. That's a lot to think about. But, you know, the most important thing is that we have to think of ourselves as women and what we're going through and what we hope to accomplish. So I'm going to take a musical break here, and I'm going to play one of my favorite songs. It's called The Battle Hymn of Women, and it's by Betsy Ross and the Women's Chorus. And then when we come back, I'll just have a few final words.
My eyes eyes have seen the glory of the flame of women's rage, kept smoldering for centuries, now burning in this age. No longer are we prisoners in that same old gilded cage. That's why we're marching. Told us to speak softly, to be gentle and to smile. Expected us to change ourselves with every passing style. Said the only work for women was to clean and sweep and file. That's why we're marching on. It is we who've done your cooking, done your cleaning, kept your rules. We gave birth to all your children and we taught them in your schools. We kept the system running, but we're laying down our tools. That's why we're marching on. Move on over, or we'll move on over you. Move on over, or we'll move on over you. Move on over, or we'll move on over you. For women's time has come.
You think that you can buy us off with crummy wedding rings. You never give us half the profit that our labor brings. Our anger eats into us. We no longer bow to kings.
That's why we're marching on.
Yes, women's time has come. And there was this one word in there called unshackle. And I want to just do a shout out to my dear friend, Dr. Jacqueline Lawrence, who wrote a wonderful play called Unshackled about African-American women that I can equate with all women, unshackled. And we're becoming unshackled. Well, folks, that's it for our show. We did something different in honor of Indigenous People's Day, known as also as Columbus Day. If you like the show, let me know. Email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. And please, please go to www.kbbf.org and become a member or a sustaining member, but support your community radio station here in Sonoma County. I am really excited. I actually donate every month to this station so I can stay on the air. You know, and I want everybody out there to support me and all the wonderful people who do programs. You know, we're all volunteers here. Our time, we give our time because we believe in the voice of community radio. So please go to kbbf.org and, like I said, hit the button and make your donation or become a sustainer. Remember, folks, our children are the future. We must never lose sight of that. You know, I think of our garden. We plant a seed. We put good earth on it. We water it. And eventually a beautiful plant comes up. It's the same thing with children. Anyway, you've been listening to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt. If you have any questions or any concerns or you'd like to write me, please email me at Elaine, E-L-A-I-N-E, at womenspaces.com. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
She knows everything you do because a woman in your life is you. Because a woman in your life.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, October 8th, 2018.